Hello, and welcome to the Ingersoll Rand Gardner Denver transaction call. All lines have been placed on mute, and today's call is being recorded. Questions will be taken over the phone, and instructions will be given at that time. There is a PDF for you to download, and you can find that under the Files tab in the lower left side of your screen. For optimal viewing and participation, please disable your pop-up blockers. And finally, should you need technical assistance, as a best practice, we suggest you first refresh your browser. If that does not resolve the issue, please click on the support option in the upper right-hand corner of your screen for online troubleshooting. It is now my pleasure to turn today's program over to Vic Kinney, Investor Relations Leader for Gardner Denver. Vic, the floor is yours.
Thank you. Good morning to everyone on the call, and thank you for joining us. As a reminder, a copy of the slide deck, which will be referenced during this call, and the press release regarding the transaction are available on the Investor Relations section of both companies' websites. In addition, a replay of this morning's conference call will be available later today. Before we get started, I would like to remind everyone that certain of the statements on this call are forward-looking in nature and are subject to the risks and uncertainties discussed in both companies' previous SEC filings, which you should read in conjunction with the information provided on this call. Please refer to slides 2 and 3, as well as the appendix, for our full disclosure on forward-looking statements, as well as other applicable legal disclaimers. Joining me on the call today are Mike Lamach, Chairman and CEO of Ingersoll Rand, Vicente Reynal, CEO of Gardner Denver, Sue Carter, SVP and CFO of Ingersoll Rand, and Neil Snyder, CFO of Gardner Denver. With that, please go to slide 5, and I will now turn the call over to Mike.
Great, and I'll turn to slide 6. Thanks, Vic. Thanks, everyone, for joining us on the call today with short notice. I have the great pleasure of kicking off today's call by announcing that Ingersoll Rand and Gardner Denver have reached a definitive agreement to partner on a transformative transaction that we believe will unlock significant value for our employees and our shareholders. Ingersoll Rand will be separating its world-class industrial businesses by way of a spinoff to Ingersoll Rand shareholders, and then combining it with premier operating company Gardner Denver to create a stronger, more diversified global leader in mission-critical flow creation and industrial technologies. The transaction also includes the pending Precision Flow Systems acquisition we recently announced, which we expect to close mid-year. At the same time, the remaining Ingersoll Rand climate businesses will become a pure-play global leader in climate control solutions for buildings, homes, and transportation. The new industrial company will have pro forma revenue and EBITDA of $6.6 billion and $1.6 billion, respectively. We expect it will assume the Ingersoll Rand company name and stock ticker symbol, and will be led by Gardner Denver's CEO, Vicente Reynal. The new pure-play climate company will have pro forma revenue and EBITDA of $12.9 billion and $2 billion, respectively. We expect it will be renamed when the transaction is completed, and I will continue to serve as chairman and CEO of the new climate company. We believe the combination of two premium, complementary industrial leaders who share strong operating platforms and high-performance employee cultures offers the opportunity to drive significant innovation and growth potential with meaningful revenue and cost synergies supported by secular growth trends and diverse end market exposure. We are also extremely excited about the opportunity to capitalize on our success in the climate control space to form the premier pure-play global leader. This enables us to leverage a simplified business model and structure and sharpen our sustainability focus and our investments. This is a space where we have clearly differentiated performance, and we have seen significant opportunity as a pure-play to drive this performance to the next level for employees, customers, and shareholders. Turning to slide 7, I'd like to briefly walk through a summary of the transaction. As I discussed earlier, Ingersoll Rand's industrial business will combine with Gardner Denver to form a new industrial company valued at approximately $15 billion. The value of the deal to Ingersoll Rand shareholders is approximately $7.7 billion, including $5.8 billion in equity value in the new company and $1.9 billion in cash proceeds that will go to ClimateCo upon closing. The transaction has been structured as a reverse Morris Trust, which is expected to be tax-free for both parties and their respective shareholders. Ingersoll Rand shareholders will own 50.1% of the new industrial company. There will be no change to the ownership of Ingersoll Rand shares, which will become the ClimateCo pure play. Gardner Denver shareholders will retain 49.9% of the new industrial company. The new industrial company will operate under a diverse portfolio of iconic brands, including Gardner Denver, Vicente will be the CEO, with the leadership team comprised from both companies. The board of directors of the new industrial company will consist of Gardner Denver and Ingersoll Rand designated directors. The new Pure Play Climate Control business will retain Ingersoll Rand's current board membership and franchise brands such as Trane and Thermo King. The deal is expected to close by early 2020. Now I'd like to turn the call over to Vicente to walk you through the new combined industrial company and what makes this combination such a terrific partnership. Vicente.
Thank you, Mike, and good morning to everyone on the call. I would like to start by echoing Mike's opening remarks. This is a very exciting day for employees and shareholders of both companies as we announce the creation of the new industrial co. I am personally very honored to be the CEO of the new company and look forward to integrating these two leading industrial platforms so they can achieve their full potential. Turning to slide 9, let me spend a few minutes on an overview of the new industrial co and the benefits of the transaction for shareholders of both companies. Combining Gardner Denver and Ingersoll Rand's industrial segment brings together two premier companies with long histories of innovation, highly reliable products, talented employees, and winning cultures to create a diversified global leader in mission-critical flow creation and industrial technologies. The combined company will create a focused global leader with greater scale and reach, with a highly complementary portfolio of products across technologies such as air compressors, blowers, vacuum, and fluid management, as well as other specialty industrial technologies like tools, material handling, and small electric vehicles. It is also worth noting that the new industrial co will serve more diverse end markets and will greatly reduce exposure to cyclical end markets like upstream oil and gas. The pro forma company will have a compelling financial profile with revenues of approximately $6.6 billion, strong margin profile, and solid recurring aftermarket revenue. Given world-class operating platforms for both companies and strong track records of commercial and operational excellence, we expect to deliver meaningful cost synergies in areas like manufacturing, supply chain, and structural cost, in addition to significant opportunities for revenue growth. In short, this is a great fit with two premier companies coming together as one, offering great long-term shareholder value creation. For those of you on the call who may not be familiar with both companies, I will provide a brief overview. Starting first on slide 10, Gardner Denver is an industry-leading flow creation company, underpinned by mission-critical products, strong execution, and leading financial performance. The company operates under three distinct segments, industrials, energy, and medical, each of which utilizes a multi-brand strategy to sell original equipment and aftermarket parts and services around the world. We run the business with our simple strategy, which is predicated on four basic principles: building and deploying talent, accelerating growth, expanding margins, and efficiently allocating capital. We're very proud of what we have been able to accomplish over the past few years, and the results are visible in our financials, as each of our segments operate well in excess of 20% adjusted EBITDA margins and have solid growth prospects as we look ahead. Turning to slide 11, you will see a lot of the same characteristics in Ingersoll Rand's industrial segment. It is a rich portfolio of assets comprised of the compression technologies and services, club car, fluid management, power tools, and material handling businesses. The portfolio has market-leading brands with strong diversification across a number of growing end markets. We're also very excited about the pending acquisition of Precision Flow Systems, which will strengthen the fluid management product offering of the combined company. With pro forma 2019 revenues of approximately $3.8 billion, inclusive of the pending PFS acquisition, the Ingersoll Rand's industrial segment has meaningful global scale and a very healthy aftermarket mix at 40% of revenues. The team at Ingersoll Rand industrial segment has done a fantastic job over the years building a leading platform and one that I see as a natural fit with the Gardner Denver portfolio. Turning to slide 12, I would like to highlight many of the factors that make this transaction so compelling and will unlock meaningful value creation for shareholders. Both Gardner Denver and Ingersoll Rand's industrial segment are globally recognized leaders with a broad range of innovative products and solutions to meet the growing needs of our customers. With over 300 years of combined heritage, both companies are known for premium high quality and efficient technology, with a global footprint to locally serve their customers. Under the joint banner of Ingersoll Rand, we will be able to deploy a family of iconic brands to accelerate growth and drive the financial profile of the combined company to the next level. Names like Gardner Denver, NASH, ARO, and Club Car are well-recognized leaders in the markets in which they operate, and we intend to continue to employ a multi-brand strategy moving forward. Additionally, the highly complementary nature of end markets and geographic presence provides greater stability for the combined company. As you saw in the previous slides, Gardner Denver has a strong presence in the U.S. and Europe, with a smaller presence in emerging markets like Asia Pacific. Ingersoll Rand's industrial segment provides a logical balance since it has a meaningful presence in the U.S. with a relatively smaller presence in Europe, but greater exposure to higher growth geographies like Asia Pacific. The result is a geographically diverse business with approximately 90% of revenues tied to more stable GDP growth markets and only approximately 10% tied to the more cyclical end market of upstream oil and gas. As you recall, this 90-10 blend has been a stated longer-term goal of Gardner Denver since our IPO. Turning to slide 13, the combined company will have a broad suite of technologies and innovative solutions to serve a large and diverse customer base. Both companies are noted leaders in compression technologies and will have amongst the broadest offering in the industry, from centrifugal, oil-free, and oil-lubricated compressors to more niche technologies like blowers and vacuums. In addition, the combination of Gardner Denver's medical segment with Ingersoll Rand's fluid management platform and the pending PFS acquisition creates a nearly $1 billion platform, leveraging common technologies and considerably opens the market for ongoing growth. Balanced out with upstream and midstream energy from the Gardner Denver portfolio and small electric vehicles, power tools, and material handling from Ingersoll Rand, the result is a highly diverse set of industrial offerings that can leverage innovation excellence, common sales channels, and establish customer base to drive future growth. Slide 14 highlights an area that both companies have long prided themselves on, which is an established recurring aftermarket revenue comprised of service, parts, and consumables at nearly $2.5 billion in combined high-margin aftermarket revenue. This solidifies the resiliency of the new company's financial profile. It also provides a platform for further market penetration as our combined install base grows, and we can leverage best practices like Ingersoll Rand's leading service franchise across the businesses. Moving to slide 15, the most important asset of this transaction is our people and their commitment to excellence. Both companies have winning cultures, and the approximately 17,000 employees of the combined enterprise will be able to leverage the principles of proven operating platforms like GDX and Ingersoll Rand's business operating system to drive ongoing continuous improvement. We truly believe that employees are at their best when they have an ownership mentality. Following that philosophy, and to make today's announcement even more exciting, I am pleased to announce that after we close the transaction, we intend to grant all employees of the newly combined company who are not already equity eligible with an equity award in the new company. For those of you who are familiar with Gardner Denver, you will remember that we did something similar at the time of our IPO, and we recognize the impact it has had in creating an ownership mindset and driving results. We strongly believe that all employees of the new company should be owners of their business to drive a deeper sense of engagement and create ongoing value for all shareholders. With that, I will turn it over to Neil to provide an overview of the financial benefits.
Thank you, Vicente, and good morning to everyone on the call. Moving to slide 17, we'd like to provide some additional detail regarding the financially compelling nature of this transaction. The combination of Gardner Denver and Ingersoll Rand's industrial segment provides greater scale, reinforces our asset-light model, and maintains our efficient capital structure, providing flexibility for future investment and growth. The combined company on a pro forma basis, including Gardner Denver, Ingersoll Rand's industrial segment, and the pending PFS acquisition, will generate approximately $6.6 billion and a pre-synergy adjusted EBITDA of $1.4 billion. And $1.6 billion of adjusted EBITDA, including inclusive of estimated synergies, resulting in margins of approximately 25%. In addition, the combined company will benefit from improved balance and financial resiliency, with an estimated $2.5 billion recurring aftermarket platform. Also, our portfolio will shift to be more levered to stable GDP growth markets, improving from approximately 75% of revenue for Gardner Denver to approximately 90% for the newly combined company. Now turning to slide 18, we've identified significant cost synergies in manufacturing, supply chain and procurement, as well as simplification and optimization of the overall cost structure of the newly combined company. We expect to achieve approximately $250 million of annualized cost synergies by the end of year three following the close of this transaction, and fully realized in year four. We'll spend an estimated $450 million in one-time costs, comprised roughly of $350 million to capture the cost synergies, and approximately $100 million related to separation costs of Ingersoll Rand's industrial segment. Also, as Vicente mentioned, due to the highly complementary nature of the product offerings and technologies, we believe there are incremental revenue growth opportunities above and beyond the cost synergies noted. Overall, we're confident that our joint leadership teams, talented global employees, and world-class operating platforms will mitigate much of the risk that may exist in the integration and the delivery of the stated synergies. Our confidence is further strengthened by the granting of equity to all employees, fostering a culture of ownership and engagement to drive long-term value for our shareholders. Moving to slide 19, immediately following the close of this transaction, we expect to have approximately $3 billion of net debt, including the incremental $1.9 billion paid to Climate Co. as part of this transaction. The resulting net debt leverage ratio of Industrial Co. will be approximately 2.3 times, and is reduced to approximately 1.9 times when adjusted for the estimated cost synergies. Our relatively low post-transaction leverage, coupled with our strong free cash flow generation, will provide significant flexibility and optionality, allowing us to continue to execute on our disciplined and balanced capital allocation strategy. With that, I'll now turn it back over to Vicente.
Thank you, Neil. Moving to slide 20. I'm excited to lead the new Industrial Co. as the rationale for combining these two businesses is clear from a commercial, operational, and financial perspective. I'm a firm believer that the best team wins, and with a talented global workforce of 17,000 employees and a strong board of directors represented by 7 members from Gardner Denver and 3 from Ingersoll Rand, and led by our chairperson, Pete Stavros, I am confident we have the right team to execute this transformational transaction and create significant value for employees, customers, and shareholders. I will now turn it back over to Mike, who will discuss the transaction benefits for Ingersoll Rand and its shareholders.
Thanks, Vicente. Let's turn to slide 22. I hope that overview of Industrial Co. provided you with greater insight into why we are so confident in the value creation potential of this partnership. I've touched on the major terms of the transaction, so I wanted to spend just a few minutes on the benefits of the transaction for Ingersoll Rand shareholders. First and foremost is ownership of the premier pure-play climate control company. Our climate control businesses have consistently improved over time and are delivering top-tier financial performance, but we see tremendous runway to continue to raise the bar with sharpened focus, simplification, and prioritization. We also believe our shareholders will benefit from ownership in the newly combined stronger industrial co and through participation in the upside from synergies associated with the combined company. One of the most compelling aspects of the deal is the commonality between the two companies related to high-performance winning cultures and the execution of strong, well-ingrained business operating systems that drive operational excellence throughout each company. Alignment on these elements not only creates a good fit for Ingersoll Rand employees joining Industrial Co., which is very important to us, it also reduces integration risk associated with the combination. Lastly, Ingersoll Rand will receive $1.9 billion in cash in conjunction with the transaction, which enhances our capital allocation optionality. Turning to slide 23, it's clear the world is becoming warmer and more urbanized and resource-constrained. Global warming is a major concern, while natural resource scarcity continues to pressure food supplies, health and wellness, and general infrastructure. As a pure-play climate control company, all of our solutions for buildings, homes, and transportation directly address these global megatrends, reducing greenhouse gas emissions and energy intensity, while increasing access to products and services that enhance well-being, like healthful perishable foods, life-saving medicines, and comfort cooling. We are innovating with next-generation low GWP refrigerants and reducing energy intensity with our highly engineered efficient equipment and controls and electrified heating and electrified transportation solutions. Doing so improves air quality and reduces greenhouse gas emissions in cities. We are empowering our customers to address their sustainability goals and improve their own operations with controls technology, predictive analytics, and strong service offerings. We see long-term opportunities to address these global megatrends. Our global reach and unmatched sales, service, and channel excellence further positions us to reduce up to 2% of the world's greenhouse gas emissions by 2030, utilizing innovations we already have in the market today. Turning to slide 24, we wanted to provide you with a snapshot of what the new ClimateCo pure-play company will look like using our January guidance for 2019, after the elimination of stranded costs and deployment of the $1.9 billion cash payment associated with the deal. This may be most useful for those of you that are not very familiar with the company. It's a $12.9 billion business with approximately $2 billion in EBITDA, or roughly 15.7%. The business has a comprehensive portfolio of equipment, controls, and services, and a proven operating system that has generated top-tier revenue growth and incremental margins over many years. This will be one of the premier climate control companies in the world with global reach and a high mix of aftermarket recurring revenue streams. Now I'd like to turn the call over to Sue to discuss ClimateCo's financials in more detail. Sue?
Thanks, Mike, and good morning to everyone who has joined today's call. Please go to slide number 26. As you can see from the chart, the fundamentals of the business are expected to remain strong post-closing of this transaction. As we move forward with our pure-play climate strategy, we expect to eliminate stranded costs through simplification and complexity reduction and to grow earnings and cash flow for ClimateCo. This work will get underway this year, and we're going to provide updates as we move through the process. We also clearly expect to improve upon the underlying revenue and margins of the business beyond our 2019 guidance as we move towards the end of 2021. The core principles of how we're managing the business will still apply. Modest working capital of between 3 to 4%, low capex intensity of between 1 to 2%, and strong free cash flow of equal to or greater than net income. We've evaluated our effective tax rate, or ETR, at a high level, and our analysis shows the ClimateCo ETR to be at or below 21%, which is very slightly lower than our current guidance for the total company of 21 to 22%. It's really too early to call the ETR for ClimateCo with more specificity, but it's an area of potential upside to watch as we sharpen our analysis in the coming months. With respect to transaction-related costs, we expect to incur between $150 million and $200 million and plan to provide updates with more specifics as well as other activities. Importantly, I'd like to highlight that we expect to maintain our dividend of $2.12 per share annualized for ClimateCo post-closing and through 2020. This will deliver a more attractive dividend yield than we currently have for the total company and reflects our commitment to maintaining a strong dividend and our continued confidence in our ability to generate strong free cash flow at ClimateCo. For 2021 and beyond, we expect to raise the dividend with earnings growth consistent with our longstanding capital deployment priorities. Please go to slide 27. This is an illustrative pro forma view of our standalone climate business if the deal were completed and stranded costs were mitigated in 2019. When combined with the deployment of the $1.9 billion cash payment we will receive, we would expect to see very healthy EPS accretion. In addition, there are other cash generation opportunities and potential uses for capital deployment in 2019. And now I'd like to turn the call back over to Mike for a few closing comments before we take Q&A.
Great. Thanks, Sue. Let's go to slide 28. Climate Coal will continue to operate with the same strategy for success that has guided our company for the past 10 years and enabled us to drive top-tier financial performance. Sustained growth above GDP through a singular strategic focus on secular megatrends towards sustainability and energy efficiency. Best-in-class incremental margins through a relentless focus on operational excellence using our business operating system. Powerful free cash flow and dynamic capital allocation that invests capital where it earns the best returns. And a strong commitment to employee engagement and a winning culture that enables our performance to be sustainable over the long term. Our singular focus on climate control serves to sharpen our ability to execute against this strategy and deliver even stronger shareholder returns. Please go to slide 29. In closing, we're excited about the opportunity to unlock significant shareholder value through this transaction. Both companies will be global market leaders with strong financials, clear strategies to drive profitable growth for shareholders, and winning cultures that make their performance sustainable. And with that, Vicente, Neil, Sue, and I will be happy to take your questions. Operator?
To ask a question, please press star followed by the number one on your telephone keypad. Again, that is star followed by the number one on your telephone keypad. Our first question will come from the line of Julian Mitchell with Barclays. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning, and congratulations on the transaction. Maybe a first question for Vicente and Neil. The timing of targeted synergies, the aggregate number looks very much in line with prior industrial transactions. The speed of it, I guess, is pretty rapid. So maybe give, if you can, a little bit more color on that supply chain and procurement bucket, which is the majority of the synergies. Any detail on the proportion of shared versus non-shared suppliers? And any factors you can give us underpinning the confidence on the speed of synergy realization?
Sure, Julian. This is Neil. Regarding your question on the supply chain, we've spent a fair amount of time evaluating. On the supply chain side, obviously the supply chain does come a little bit quicker, more near term. Same with organizational simplification, whereas the manufacturing, the structural costs that we mentioned are more midterm when you mentioned timing. On the supply chain costs, we do have significant overlap on the industrial components of the product portfolio, whereas we do have some areas that aren't. But, overall of the $250 million, you're looking at 40-plus percent related to supply chain.
Thanks. And then my second question, really switching to Mike and Sue. You talked in the past about the dis-synergies from demerging industrial from climate, and you mentioned some separation as well as stranded costs in this morning's presentation. I just wondered what had changed in terms of your perspectives on the demerits of splitting the company, and particularly in the context of the PFS deal was only announced, I think, a couple of months ago, adding capital to industrial, and now you're exiting the business.
Yeah, Julian, actually, I'm going to take just a second to emphasize and reemphasize what Neil just said. I was very impressed in our discussions and learning more about the operating system that Gardner Denver's put in place. And one of the strategies, the I2V work that the team has done, I think is outstanding. And so I think it's a lot of opportunity to put really the best of what both companies have to accelerate this. And I think the cultures are very much around operational excellence and accelerating productivity. So we really are starting from a running point, and I feel very confident that the teams will work well together. Now, to your question to us regarding what's changed, over the past 10 years, I think I can tell you I've done no less than four complete portfolio reviews with the board, and we've always been, very analytical about sort of the headwinds and tailwinds associated with whether we should split the company or run it in a combined form. If we would have thought about spinning off the industrial company without a scaled partner to merge with, we would have had $150 million of dis-synergy plus the cost of standing up the separate public company. This deal has $250 million in synergy in that, which, of course, half of that accrues to the IR shareholder. We think that we can simplify much of what we're doing in the remaining Climate Co. And avoid those startup costs. And I think that when you put that all together, it's very compelling. So what's different about it is a strong partner to merge with, a great combined management team to take it forward, and a lot of confidence around the ability to generate what we're committing to shareholders.
Great. Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Joe Ritchie with Goldman Sachs.
And congratulations! Excited for both your companies. So maybe my first question, just taking a step back, maybe talk a little bit about how this all came together. So I'll just leave it at that. Why don't we start there?
Yeah, I mean, I think Joe, I'll take initial cut to that. These two businesses have known each other for quite some time. As you know, we're strong, both premium players in the industrial space, industrial market. And we have always stated that, our portfolio changed from 75-25 to 90-10. A lot of conversations obviously start transpiring at the beginning of the year leading to this transaction announced today.
Yeah, and I would probably, Joe, add, because I'll pick up a bit on Julian's last part of his question, Precision Flow Systems. We have been on each other's radar screens, I think, between Gardner Denver and IR for some time, looking for timing and the right combination to take place, not knowing that this would actually, get to a definitive agreement and be consummated, and knowing that the PFS assets had been on our radar for 10 years and knew that it would be complementary if, in fact, we got to the point of closing a transaction that we're announcing this morning. We knew that the combination would be outstanding, particularly when you think about the fluid management businesses that we have, both Aero and the PF businesses, in combination with some of the medical assets in the current Gardner Denver portfolio. So we knew that that was going to be an $800 million plus portfolio with even more synergies if the deal were to go through. So, again, not knowing with certainty that all of this would take place, we took advantage, in a serial way, but knowing that if this would come to consummation, that strategically it would make a great deal of sense with PFS as well.
Now that makes a lot of sense. And if I could ask a follow-on question for both of you, so Mike, maybe starting with you, really around like portfolio and capital allocation, this becomes a much more, streamlined climate company. Clearly, there's been a lot of discussion around consolidation in that space. And so any other comments you can make around, your ability to deploy capital going forward and whether consolidation and climate continues to make sense. And then conversely, Vicente, within your portfolio, clearly, upstream energy becomes a smaller piece of the overall pie. But any more discussion around, the future of those assets would be helpful within this context.
Yeah, Joe, so the Climate Co. strategy doesn't change one bit in terms of the strategic plan we had put in place. It does create such a sharper focus on execution and our ability to really streamline what we're doing, make it very agile, very customer-focused, and continue to lead with innovation, which has been a success for us over the last 5 to 8 years for sure. So I think it just accelerates all that as opposed to change anything in terms of our views or our strategy going forward.
And, Joe, I think from my side, particularly to the upstream oil and gas portion, as you saw and we stated, this is now going to be approximately 10% of the total business. We have invested heavily in this business and transformed the business from being a pure OEM player for selling pumps to now 75% of that upstream side of the business is actually recurring aftermarket solid business. And you can see that that solidified even also on our first quarter momentum too as well. So it continues to be a business that we like. And I think I'll say, obviously, in our thought process, it continues to be one of those that if at some point in time we see a different strategic avenue, we will consider. But at this point in time, it puts it in a percentage of the business that is very well managed and we're excited about.
Thank you. Thank you both, and congratulations again.
Thank you, Joe.
Your next question comes from the line of Mike Halloran with Blue.
Hey, morning, everyone.
Morning, Mike.
Morning.
Hey, so two questions here. First, on the process here. So transactions expected to close early next year. Vicente, some thoughts from your perspective on how you guys are planning on preparing to make sure you hit the ground running from an integration perspective, and early thoughts on how that process is going to be managed from a team perspective, and how you expect to use both sides to start driving that synergy platform forward.
Yeah, so we have a preliminary structure on how we're thinking about this integration. Obviously, it includes a team from both sides. I mean, I think the benefit in this combination is that there's just a lot of great talent on both sides, and you know that has been one of our core priorities and strategic imperatives, is to ensure that, that the best team wins and we have a high level of talent and caliber. So over the next few weeks, we will be kind of kicking off a process to continue going deeper into the synergies and the integration all along the lines of getting to that point of closure in early 2020. And as you can imagine, obviously the focus is on the synergies. It's a good number. We see a good potential here on the cost side, as well as some great opportunities on the revenue synergies as well.
We've had significant experience as well. I mean, in terms of integrating the Trane acquisition 10 years ago, and even PFS at present. And I would just add to say that although we know that we need to run legally as two separate companies until the close, there's much we can do, whether it's clean room or in other ways, to get this off to a great start. And just to confirm what Vicente's saying, we want this to hit the ground running for our employees and shareholders on day one. So we're going to make sure that that's the case.
Thanks for that. And then follow-up question is more on the overlap of the two businesses as it sits today. Obviously, on the compressor space is where you guys have the most overlap. Maybe just talk a little bit about how much there really is functionally, because I know Gardner tends to be a little bit more niche in some of their applications. If there's any antitrust concerns there, or in how you're thinking about channel and product at this point.
Yeah, Mike, I think, you said it quite well. I mean, there's just a lot of good overlap in the two businesses, and the overlap is really highly complementary from a technology perspective. So I think we're complementing each other from a technology. We're complementing each other from a channel perspective, and it is also complementary from a geographical perspective. So I think at this point in time, we see a lot of good overlap, kind of complementary from each other.
Yeah, go ahead, sorry.
Thank you, Mike. I would just comment that I think it's certainly more complementary. If you think about Ingersoll Rand's business today, there's really not a vacuum or blower business. Gardner Denver today, does little itself on air dryers, and we do a fair bit of that. So I think when you put the pieces together, it forms a nice mosaic as opposed to, significant overlap or concentration anywhere.
In other words, not a lot of antitrust concerns from your guys' perspectives.
Correct.
All right, great. Well, appreciate the time and congratulations on the transaction.
Thank you, Mike.
Your next question comes from the line of Josh Pokrzywinski with Morgan Stanley.
Hi, good morning, guys, and congratulations to all.
Thanks, Josh.
Just maybe to start off on the industrial question and ask an earlier one a little differently. On the $250 million of synergies, I can't help but notice that if I look back over time, Ingersoll's compressor business, I think has lagged behind what Gardner Denver was able to do on EBITDA margins and what the large competitor in Europe has had on EBITDA margins. If I assume some level of harmonization there between those two businesses, it kind of brings the core synergy number down to something much smaller, maybe south of $150 million. Should we think about those as maybe being two separate opportunities, you know, kind of bringing up Ingersoll, you know, core compression margins and synergies, and why could maybe the number not be higher than 250 if that's the case?
So, Josh, this is Neil. You know, there are definitely several elements to the synergies, one of which is what you mentioned. But in addition to that, across the portfolio, there's also organizational simplification, which we would want to put across. And that would cross not just the complementary industrials businesses, but the entire portfolio. So from our perspective, you would see a combination of both.
Okay, got it. And then on the rest of the portfolio, you know, I think obviously upstream energy, you know, and its future in there was, you know, an important question and needed to be asked. But I guess, you know, Mike, maybe hopping in the time machine for a little bit and going back to the earlier days of Ingersoll Rand plus Trane and the question of whether or not club car fit, I think the answer was always that from a tax perspective, it just wasn't very attractive. I would imagine that those assets get written a little differently, you know, as part of this transaction. Is that a catalyst to maybe take a look at that business place in the portfolio again for you, Vicente?
I mean, I think you know, particularly on the club car, I mean, I think it's a fantastic business. The team is doing a phenomenal job delivering some good growth momentum. Josh, in my view right now, my focus is on creating and achieving the synergies and going through the integration. And that's our current focus at this point in time.
Understood. Appreciate the color and congrats again.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of John Walsh with Credit Suisse.
Hi, good morning, guys. This is Corey on for John. I'll just echo everyone with a congratulations on the announcement.
Thank you.
Just wanted to know, looking at in 2015, 2016, the organic growth declines in GDI driven by energy, I was just wondering in the combined portfolio how a normal recession would look with the reduced cyclicality.
Yeah, Corey, I think this is why we kind of stated that, you know, we see great resiliency in the combined portfolio where 90% of our revenue is going to be more aligned to GDP. And what you have seen in the past, we like to deliver performance and expressing our results as GDP plus or plus plus. With only 10%, you know, exposed to the upstream oil and gas, which is a cyclical side of the business, so I think this actually kind of works really well to maybe some of the concerns that you just highlighted there. So I think that's one of our exciting opportunities here for the future.
Corey, I would say too that from a due diligence perspective of Ingersoll Rand looking at that business, we felt it was one of the most underappreciated, misunderstood assets in the GDI portfolio, and with the incredible cash margins that it earns and the recurring revenue stream, you know, I think it's a it's part of what helps the story become a bit of a cash compounder. So, you know, we liked what we saw there.
Okay, thank you. And just to follow up on the combined industrial co, you do have balance sheet flexibility and opportunity to pursue further deals. I was just wondering if you see opportunities for simplification as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's why if you look at the pro forma net leverage of including the synergies of 1.9, it is very well balanced, and that gives us greater flexibility to continue pursuing any other strategic views that we may want to do. So I think we have we feel very comfortable with where we are at the time of close and where we will be obviously even further at the time of including the synergies.
All right. Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Corey.
Your next question comes from the line of Gautam Khanna with Cowen.
Yes, thank you, and congratulations.
Thanks, Gautam.
First question for Mike and Sue, just curious if you could give us some sense for the phasing of the costs to reduce the stranded costs, like how much and how quickly will we see that? And then I have a follow-up.
Yeah, it's going to take us through 2021 because, you know, part of the separation is really simplifying a lot of what we've done to consolidate the company over time. And part of the integration we've done at the factory and sourcing level, engineering shared services, you name it, it's going to take a bit. We also have to be, you know, very cognizant of making sure we're supporting the ability to separate, you know, and stand up and support the integration, you know, on the industrial code, NewCo side. So it'll take us through 2021 to fully resolve all of that. And we want to be really thoughtful about, you know, how we design an organization going forward. So we're going to use the opportunity to think through that in a very customer-focused way.
But I think one of the other points that I would add to that is, you know, for most who have been talking to us is we've been looking at complexity reduction and simplification for the last, you know, 18 to 24 months. And so we've got some ideas. We've got, you know, some work that's been under our belt. And I think that gives us confidence that we can, as Mike said, start the process, start it quickly and continue to work through what the organization looks like and what complexity reduction looks like throughout the organization. So it's not like we're starting from zero, but it does take the right amount of time to make sure you have the right control environment and to make sure that you've got you know, the right support for the separation of the businesses and the standalone company going forward.
And what was your estimated cost to actually reduce the stranded costs? Was it 150 to 200? Did I hear that right?
So 150 to 200 million, you heard correctly, but that was the cost of the one-time cost of the transaction. So advisors, stranded costs, legal entity separation, you know, tax work, et cetera.
Got it. And then maybe for Vicente, I just wanted to ask, following up on I think it was Josh's question, are there any prohibitions against divestment of the new industrial, any of the new industrial assets based on the RMT structure?
No, not that we know at this point in time, no.
Okay, thank you. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Robert McCarthy with Stephens.
So, in any event, congratulations. First question would be, how do we think about reducing maybe white-collar census in your overall cost? Because presumably running a pure play will just require a lot structurally less layers of management, don't you think?
We've got a need for people today. I'm not sure, Rob, how much you're watching, but you know, there's a shortage of good people today, and so we're looking to make sure the organization streamlined. This isn't about you know, taking some, you know, whack at a white-collar or blue-collared work. We're running at full capacity plus some, you know, as it relates to the last couple of years of growth. And we've been one of the few companies out there in our space that has had the capacity to respond to that. So, you know, this is about making a better, stronger, more strategically focused company faster to the customer. It's not about, you know, some massive, you know, bloodletting of people, just to be clear on that.
Okay, and then in terms of the balance sheet for the Climate Co., how do we think about kind of the optimal capital structure and expanding your comments around capital allocation and how much debt you could bear and what do you think is an optimal capital structure going forward? And then as a tail to that, you know, you're going to have a slightly different mix, obviously much more focused to the U.S. Do you think you'll be comfortable with that as a domestic U.S. pure player? Does that create opportunity for you to look abroad and kind of rejigger that underlying leverage of sales?
So Rob, the way I'd start out that conversation is, you know, in thinking about the, you know, optimal balance sheet, what we're looking at is really fitting into that triple B credit rating with the credit rating agencies. And I know that's a wide band, but that gives us a lot of optionality as we go through. The important points about thinking about the balance sheet are we're going to continue to be a great cash flow generator. We're going to continue to, you know, deploy capital the same way that we have, which is investing in the business, paying a good dividend, looking at M&A, and also doing share repurchase when we're trading below intrinsic value. So none of that is, you know, actually changing as we go forward. And in fact, I would also tell you that as you look at the percentage of the business that is North America in RemainCo, it's actually about the same as what it was before. So we don't see that as positive or negative in terms of the business. The end markets are what's going to drive, you know, the great business, and that includes that 71% that is North America.
And you can look at, Rob, you can look at Europe and China as two of the most progressive countries now around cleaning up greenhouse gas emissions. And, you know, here again, we've doubled the business between 2016 and estimated 2020 in both geographies. So I think we're running pretty hard outside the U.S. to balance the portfolio.
Well, math has never been my strong suit, but congratulations on making the right call here. It's a tremendous transaction.
Thanks, Rob.
Thank you for joining us today. This concludes our webcast. You may now disconnect.